This is Library on the Go, brought to you by the Cortez Public Library as part of our program to improve childhood literacy. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
And today Ms. Barbara is going to continue Wind in the Willows.
This is Wind in the Willows, written by Kenneth Graham. And if you remember so far, Toad has escaped from prison, dressed as a washerwoman. A train engineer gave him a ride, but when they saw that they were being chased by the police, he told Toad to jump. Next day, a bargewoman gave Toad a ride and asked him to do some washing. Well, it was soon evident that Toad didn't know the first thing about what he was doing. "Pretty washerwoman you are," gasped the bargewoman. "Never washed so much as a dishcloth in your life, I'll lay." Toad's temper, which had been simmering for some time, now boiled over. "You common, low, fat bargewoman," he shouted. "Don't you dare talk to your betters like that. Washerwoman, indeed. I would have you know that I am a toad. Very well-known, respected, distinguished toad. I may be under a bit of a clout at present, but I will not be laughed at by a bargewoman." The woman peered under his bonnet. "Why, so you are," she cried. "Well, I never, a horrid, nasty, crawly toad, and in my nice, clean barge, too. That is a thing that I will not have." And one big, mottled arm shot out and caught Toad by a foreleg. Then the world turned upside down, the barge seemed to float across the sky, and Toad found himself flying through the air. The water, when he reached it, proved cold, though not enough to quell his spirit. He rose to the surface, and when he had wiped the duckweed out of his eyes, the first thing he saw was the bargewoman looking back at him over the stern of the barge and laughing. He struck out for the shore, touched land, and climbed up the steep bank. Then, gathering his wet skirt well over his arms, he started to run after the barge as fast as his legs would carry him, wild for revenge. The bargewoman was still laughing when he drew up level with her. "Put yourself through your mangle, washerwoman," she called out, "and iron your face and crimp it, and you'll pass for quite a decent-looking toad." Toad never paused to reply. Revenge was what he wanted, not cheap, windy, verbal triumphs, though he had a thing or two he would have liked to say. Running swiftly on, he overtook the horse, unfastened the tow rope, jumped on the horse's back, and urged it to a gallop by kicking it vigorously in the side. He steered for the open country, abandoning the towpath, and swinging his steed down a rutty lane. "Stop! Stop! Stop!" shouted the bargewoman. "Yeah, I've heard that song before," said Toad, laughing, as he continued to spur his steed onward. The barge horse was not capable of any sustained effort, and it galloped soon subsided into a trot, and its trot to an easy walk. But Toad was quite contented with this. He had recovered his temper, and now he had done something he thought really clever. And he was satisfied to jog along quietly in the sun, trying to forget how very long it was since he had had a square meal. He had traveled some miles, his horse and he was feeling drowsy in the hot sunshine, when the horse stopped, lowered his head, and began to nibble the grass. And Toad just saved himself from falling off. He looked about him and found he was on a wide common, dotted with patches of gorse and bramble, as far as he could see. Near him stood a dingy gypsy caravan, and a man was sitting, very busy smoking, and staring into the wide world. A fire of sticks was burning nearby, and over the fire hung an iron pot, and out of that pot came forth smells, warm, rich, and varied smells. Toad sniffed and looked at the gypsy, and the gypsy smoked and looked at him. Presently, the gypsy took the pipe out of his mouth and remarked in a careless way, "Want to sell that there horse of yours?" It had not occurred to Toad to turn the horse into cash. "What?" he said. "Me sell this beautiful young horse of mine?" "Oh, no," he said. "It's out of the question. I'm too fond of him, and he dotes on me. All the same, how much might you be disposed to offer me?"
The gypsy looked the horse over, and he looked Toad over with equal care. "Shilling a leg," he said briefly.
"A shilling a leg," cried Toad. "I must work that out."
He climbed down off his horse and did sums on his fingers. At last he said,
"That comes to 4 shillings. Oh, no, I could not think of accepting 4 shillings for this young horse of mine."
"Well," said the gypsy, "I'll make it 5 shillings, and that's 3 and 6 pence more than the animal's worth."
Toad pondered. He was hungry and penniless and still some way from home, and enemies might be looking for him. To one in such a situation, 5 shillings may very well appear a large sum of money. On the other hand, it did not seem very much to get for a horse. But then the horse hadn't cost him anything. At last he said firmly,
"You hand me 6 shillings and 6 pence and as much breakfast as I can eat out of that iron pot of yours. In return, I will make over to you my spirited young horse, with all the harness and trappings on him, free thrown in. If that's not good enough, say so, and I'll be getting on. I know a man near here who's wanted this horse for years."
The gypsy grumbled frightfully and declared he'd be ruined. But in the end, he lugged a dirty canvas bag out of the depths of his trouser pocket and counted out 6 shillings and 6 pence into Toad's paw. Then he disappeared into the caravan and returned with a large iron plate. He tilted the pot, and a stream of hot, rich stew gurgled into it. Toad took the plate on his lap and stuffed and stuffed and stuffed and kept asking for more. And the gypsy never grudged at him. He thought he had never eaten so good a breakfast in all his life. When Toad had taken as much stew on board as he thought he could possibly hold, he got up and said goodbye to the gypsy and took an affectionate farewell of the horse. And the gypsy, who knew the riverside well, gave him directions which way to go, and he set forth on his travels again in the best possible spirits. He was, indeed, a very different Toad from the animal of an hour ago. The sun was shining brightly. His wet clothes were quite dry. He had money in his pockets once more. He was nearing home and friends and safety. And he had had a substantial meal, hot and nourishing, and felt big and strong and self-confident. We're going to stop for a minute. Let Miss Dora do a station break.
This is Library on the Go on KSJD 91.5, KZET Toyoc at 90.5, and KICO Rico at 89.5. We're also heard in Mancos at 91.1 and Pleasant View at 90.9. KSJD is member-supported, solar-powered community radio, heard across the Four Corners area from Rico to Shiprock, Mancos to Kayenta, and beyond. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at ksjd.org. And please like us on Facebook. We'd also like to ask you to remember 20. Read to a child the most important 20 minutes of your day. And now we're going to find out what more Toad can get into. He's so naughty.
He is, and he is such a glorified picture of himself.
Very much so.
As he tramped along gaily, he thought of his adventures and escapes, and how when things seemed at their worst, he had always managed to find a way out, and his pride and conceit began to swell within him.
"Ho-ho," he said to himself as he marched along with his chin in the air. "What a clever toad I am. There is surely no animal equal to me for cleverness in the whole world. My enemies shut me up in prison, encircled by sentries, watched night and day by warders. I walked out through them all by sheer ability coupled with courage. They pursue me with engines and police and revolvers. I snap my fingers at them and vanish, laughing into space. I am unfortunately thrown into a canal by an evil-minded woman. What of it? I swim ashore, and I seize her horse. I ride off in triumph, and I sell the horse for a whole pocket full of money and an excellent breakfast. Ho-ho! I am the toad, the handsome, the popular, the successful toad.
He got so puffed up with conceit that he made up a song as he walked in praise of himself and sang it at the top of his voice, though there was no one to hear it but him. It was, perhaps, the most conceited song that any animal had ever composed.
The world has held great heroes, as history books have showed, but never a name to go down to fame compared with that of Toad. The clever men of Oxford know all that there is to be knowed, but they none of them know one half as much as intelligent Mr. Toad. The animals sat in the ark and cried, their tears in torrents flow. Who was it said, there's land ahead? Encouraging Mr. Toad. The army all saluted as they marched along the road. Was it the king or Kitchener? No, it was Mr. Toad. The queen and her ladies-in-waiting sat at the window and sewed. She cried, look, who's that handsome man? They answered, Mr. Toad.
There was a great deal more, but too dreadfully conceited to be written down. These are some of the milder verses. He sang as he walked, and walked as he sang. But his pride was shortly to have a severe fall. After some miles, he reached the high road, and as he turned into it and glanced along its white length, he saw approaching him a speck that turned into a dot, and then a blob, and then into something very familiar, and a boop, boop fell on his delighted ear.
This is something like, said excited Toad. This is real life again. This is the world from which I have been missed so long. I will hail them, my brothers of the wheel, and they will give me a lift, and with luck it may even end in my driving up to Toad Hall. That will be one in the eye for Badger.
He stepped out into the road to hail the motor car, which came along at an easy pace, when suddenly he became very pale. His knees shook, and he doubled up with a sickening pain in his interior. And well he might, for the approaching car was the very one he had stolen out of the yard of the Red Lion Hotel, and the people in it were the very same people he had sat and watched at luncheon in the coffee room.
He sank down in a heap, murmuring, "It's all up. Prison again. Dry bread and water."
The motor car drew nearer till at last he heard it stop. Two gentlemen got out, and one of them said,
"Oh, dear, this is very sad. A poor washerwoman has fainted in the road. Perhaps she is overcome by the heat, poor creature. Let us lift her into the car and take her to the nearest village, where doubtless she has friends."
They tenderly lifted Toad into the motor car and propped him up with soft cushions, and proceeded on their way. When Toad knew that he was not recognized, his courage began to revive, and he opened first one eye, then the other.
"Look," said one of the gentlemen, "she is better already. The fresh air is doing her good. How do you feel now, ma'am?"
Thank you kindly, sir," said Toad in a feeble voice. "I'm feeling a great deal better. I was thinking if I might sit on the front seat there beside the driver where I could get the fresh air full in my face, I should soon be all right again."
"What a sensible woman," said the gentleman. "Of course you shall."
So they helped Toad into the front seat beside the driver, and on they went once more. Toad was almost himself again by now, and he turned to the driver at his side.
"Please, sir," he said, "I wish you would let me try and drive a little. It looks so easy, and I should like to be able to tell my friends that once I had driven a motor car."
The driver laughed so heartily that the gentleman inquired what the matter was, and when he heard, he said,
"Bravo, ma'am, I like your spirit. Let her have a try."
Toad scrambled into the driver's seat, took the steering wheel in his hands, listened to the instructions given him, and set the car in motion, very slowly and carefully. The gentlemen behind clapped their hands and applauded, saying,
"How well she does it! Fancy, a washerwoman driving a car as well at that!"
and the first time. Toad went a little faster, then faster still, and faster. He heard the gentleman call out, "Be careful, washerwoman," and this annoyed him, and he began to lose his head. The driver tried to interfere, but Toad pinned him down with one elbow and put on full speed.
"Washerwoman, indeed," he shouted recklessly. "Oh, I am the Toad, the motor car snatcher, the prison breaker, the Toad who always escapes."
With a cry of horror, the party flung themselves on him.
"Seize him," they cried. "Seize the Toad who stole our motor car."
Alas, they should have remembered to stop the motor car before playing pranks of that sort. With a half turn of the wheel, Toad sent the car crashing through the low roadside hedge. One mighty bound, a violent shock, and the wheels of the car were churning up the thick mud of a horse pond. Toad found himself flying through the air with the delicate curve of a swallow. He liked the motion and was just beginning to wonder whether he would develop wings when he landed with a thump in the soft, rich grass of a meadow. Sitting up, he could just see the car in the pond. The gentleman and driver were floundering helplessly in the water. He picked himself up and set off running across country as hard as he could till he was breathless and weary and had to settle into an easy walk. When he had recovered his breath and was able to think calmly, he began to laugh, and he laughed till he had to sit down under a hedge.
"Hoo-hoo," he cried. "Toad, as usual, comes out on top. Who got them to give him a lift? Who persuaded them into letting him drive? Who landed them all in a horse pond? Who escaped flying gaily through the air, leaving them in the mud? Why, Toad, of course. Clever Toad, great Toad, good Toad. How clever I am, how clever, how very clever."
A slight noise behind him made his turn his head and look. Oh, horror! About 2 fields off, a chauffeur and 2 large rural policemen were running towards him as hard as they could go. Toad pelted away again.
"Oh, my," he gasped. "Oh, my, oh, my."
He glanced back and saw to his dismay that they were gaining on him. On he ran. He did his best, but he was a fat animal and his legs were short, and still they gained. He could hear them close behind him now. He struggled on wildly, looking back over his shoulder at the enemy, when suddenly the earth failed under his feet. He grasped at the air and splash! He found himself head over ears in deep, rapid water. In his panic, he had run straight into the river. He rose to the surface and tried to grasp the reeds and rushes that grew along the water's edge, but the stream was so strong it tore them out of his hands.
"Oh, my," gasped Toad, "if ever I steal a motor car again."
Then down he went and came up breathless and sputtering. Presently, he saw a big, dark hole in the bank just above his head, and as the stream bore him past, he reached up and caught hold of the edge and held on. Slowly and with difficulty, he drew himself up out of the water. There he remained for some minutes, puffing and panting. As he stared before him into the dark hole, some bright small thing shone and twinkled in its depths, moving towards him. A face grew up around it, a familiar face, brown and small with whiskers, grave and round with neat ears and silky hair. It was the Water Rat. Chapter 9. The Return of Toad. The rat put out a paw, gripped Toad by the scruff of the neck, and gave a great hoist and pull, and the waterlogged Toad came up over the edge of the hole till at last he stood in the hall, streaked with mud and weed, but happy and high-spirited now that he had found himself once more in the house of a friend.
"Oh, Ratty," he cried, "I've been through such times since I last saw you. You can't think. Just hold on till I tell you." "Toad," said the Water Rat, "go upstairs at once and take off that old cotton rag that looks as if it belongs to some washerwoman. I have something to say to you later.
Tud was at first inclined to stop and do some talking back at him. He had had enough of being ordered about in prison. However, he caught sight of himself in the looking-glass over the hat-stand, with the rusty black bonnet perched rakishly over one eye, and he changed his mind and went very quickly upstairs to the rat's dressing-room. By the time he came down again, luncheon was on the table. While they ate, Toad told Rat all his adventures. The more he talked, the more grave and silent the rat became. When at last Toad had talked himself to a standstill, the rat said,
"Now, Toady, seriously, don't you see what an ass you've been making of yourself? You've been handcuffed, imprisoned, starved, chased, insulted, and ignominiously flung into the water. Where is the amusement in that? Where does the fun come in? And all because you must needs and go steal a motor car. You never had anything but trouble from the moment you set eyes on one. Think of your friends. Do you suppose it's any pleasure to me to hear animals saying, 'I'm the chap that keeps company with jailbirds?'"
Toad heaved a deep sigh and said,
"Quite right, Ratty. I've been a conceited ass. I can see that. As for motor cars, I've not been so keen about them since my last ducking in that river of yours. Fact is, I've had enough of adventures. I shall lead a quiet life, pottering about Toad Hall, and I shall keep a pony chaise to jog about the country in, as I used to in the old days."
"Do you mean you haven't heard?" cried the rat.
"Heard what?" said Toad, turning pale.
"About the stoats and weasels."
"No," cried Toad. "What have they been doing?"
"They've been and taken Toad Hall."
A large tear welled up in each of Toad's eyes, overflowed and splashed on the table. Plop, plop.
"When you got into that trouble of yours," said Rat, "it was a good deal talked about down here. Animals took side. The river bankers stuck up for you, but the wild wood animals said hard things. Served you right. You were done for this time. You would never come back again. Never. And one night a band of weasels and ferrets and stoats broke into the Toad Hall and have been living there ever since."
"Oh, have they?" said Toad, getting up and seizing a stick. "I'll jolly soon see about that."
"It's no good," called Rat after him. "You'll only get into trouble."
But there was no holding the toad. He marched down the road, his stick over his shoulder, till he got near his front gate, when suddenly there popped up from behind the palings a long yellow ferret with a gun.
"Who comes there?" said the ferret sharply. "What do you mean by talking like that to me?" said Toad very angrily. "Come out or I'll—"
The ferret said never a word, but brought his gun to his shoulder. Toad dropped flat in the road, and bang! A bullet whistled over his head. The startled Toad scrambled to his feet and scampered down the road. And as he ran, he heard the ferret laughing a horrid, thin little laugh. He went back, got out the boat, and set off rowing upriver to where the garden of Toad Hall came down to the waterside. Arriving within sight of his old home, he rested on his oars and surveyed the land cautiously. All seemed very peaceful and deserted. He would try the boathouse first, he thought. Very warily he paddled up the creek and was just passing under the bridge when, crash! A great stone dropped from above, smashed through the bottom of the boat. It filled and sank, and Toad found himself struggling in deep water. Looking up, he saw two stoats leaning over the parapet of the bridge, watching him with glee.
"It'll be your head next time, Toady," they called out to him.
Toad swam to shore, while the stoats laughed and laughed.
"Well, what did I tell you?" said the rat crossly when Toad related his disappointing experiences. "And now you've been and lost me my boat, and simply ruined that nice suit I lent you. Really, Toad, be patient. We can do nothing until we have seen the mole and the badger."
"Oh, ah, yes, the mole and the badger," said Toad. "What's become of the dear fellows? I had forgotten all about them." "Well, you may ask," said the rat reproachfully. "While you were riding about in motor cars and breakfasting on the fat of the land, those two animals have been camping out in every sort of weather, watching over your house, contriving how to get it back for you. You don't deserve such loyal friends, Toad. You really don't."
"Oh, I know," sobbed Toad. "Let me go and find them and share their hardships and..."
"Hold on. Supper's here.
Hooray!" And we're going to leave it there until next week.
I'm going to say Toad's a turkey.
He's something else, that's for sure.
"Hooray, dinner's here."
He has a very limited attention span.
I think in some of those books that we have that are geared for easy readers, there's a story about Toad and Ratty growing up and how Ratty's mom worked for Toad's family, and how Toad hurt one of Ratty's toys and it had to be sewn back together. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep on thinking about that because things haven't changed very much.
Toad, unfortunately, has not grown up.
No, he hasn't.
Maybe physically, but not mentally.
What do they say? Arrested development.
Yes.
Yes. We have story times every Thursday at 10:30, and of course we air here every Sunday at 3:30. And now we're going to go ahead and play some music and catch us next week for the continuation of Wind in the Willows.